Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Crazy Eyes True Crime Podcast with your host, AK. This is my first solo run, and it's going to be a true mini-sode, not like the 30-minute mini-sode that I did the other day. I have no guests, so please bear with me as I find my podcast footing without the fun commentary of my friends and family. We're now on more than 9 podcast hosting platforms with an average listener audience of 106 people, and that is amazing, you guys. Thank you so much for your support. We're on Instagram and Facebook now too, and we're working on a website that will be up shortly so you can get exclusive access to bonus content, sources, photos, and videos. Also, you can subscribe to this podcast on Patreon, and our fan club members will receive an ad-free listening experience along with a monthly bonus episode or two. Again, thanks so much for your support, and if you like this podcast, please be sure to like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. The handle for all of these are at Crazy Eyes Podcast. All right, let's get into it. Alaska has tons of missing person cases, and lots of women and girls are still missing without a trace. And while there's a huge population of missing Indigenous women, the information on a lot of them is scarce. So I'm going to try to do my best to dig into more of their cases over the next couple of weeks so I can do a mini series on this podcast, covering their stories, bringing awareness to their cases, and the more people that we can get talking about these missing girls, the more information could come to light. Although the woman I'm going to cover today isn't Indigenous, her case is extremely puzzling and really stuck with me since I heard the Alaska Unsolved podcast series. So a shout out to him because it was absolutely amazing with so much detail, and he even had the sister of the victim interviewed several times throughout the podcast to give listeners a really good picture of who she was. And I'm going to refer to him as him because I think he wants to stay anonymous. I couldn't find his name anywhere. And there's a couple podcasts that I really like this, where Case File and Swindled, and those podcasters are choosing to remain anonymous. So I'm going to totally respect that and not dig in to try to find out what their identity is. But I'll link his podcast down below if this case intrigued you like it did for me. And you can gather absolutely all the information on this podcast as you possibly can. It is a really good series. With that being said, today I'm going to tell you the story of the missing woman named Erin Marie Gilbert. Erin was born on May 4th, 1971, and at the time that she went missing, she was 24 years old, and today she'd be in her late 40s. She was extremely stunning, with model-esque looks, standing 5'11", brunette, with a captivating smile. And I'll link my sources in the show notes and post her photo on my social media platforms. Erin grew up in sunny California with her mother and her two older sisters, Catherine and Stephanie. The three have always been super close, and when her mom remarried, she actually moved to live with her dad in San Francisco, where at the time he had been running a youth hostel. When she disappeared, Erin had relocated from San Francisco to Alaska to live with her sister Stephanie. Now, I'm sure this must have been a huge change for Erin, going from living with her mom to living with her dad to living in Alaska, where it's not sunny, it is cold, and yes, there's sun, but we all know that Alaska is infamous for very dark, long, cold winters. She was near the Elmendorf Air Base in Anchorage, Alaska, and had taken a job as a nanny. Erin was a dreamer, and she was extremely compassionate towards other people. She had always aspired to be a novelist and enjoyed writing in her free time. Meanwhile, she had planned on nannying for a little bit, which is the job that she had held when she went missing, and attending cosmetology school to get started in a career for herself that would provide stability that she needed to chase her dreams of being a writer. She grew up playing basketball, volleyball, and had always been athletic. Erin's friends and family said she was really dynamic, smart, humorous, and always making people laugh. While Erin was nannying and pursuing her life inspirations in Alaska, she met a guy named David Combs. It's actually on their first date that Erin will vanish forever. She met him originally at a bar in Anchorage a few days prior to their date. This bar, called Chilkwood Charlie's, in Anchorage was a beloved local hangout in the area for people her age. In the podcast Alaska Unsolved, he refers to this bar as your typical grungy dive bar that all the local youths loved to visit, and they often had cheap beers and live music. This would have been the exact kind of place that Erin would love to hang out, as she was said to have loved shooting pool. Erin meets this guy, David, and obviously she's interested in him, and the two make plans to travel the next day to Girdwood, Alaska for the summer music festival. Girdwood is a small resort town that's located 35 to 40 miles driving distance from Anchorage. It has stunning scenery. It is surrounded by 7 glaciers in total, with a number of small rivers and creeks and beautiful forestry in the summer. And while the winter is incredibly cold, with endless blankets of snow sweeping the mountaintops and valley below, the Girdwood Forest Fair is held every July and is an extremely popular event for young adults to attend. Here in the summer, you can hike, fish, whitewater raft, and it's located within the northernmost extent of the rainforest on Earth, with close proximity to the Chugach National Forest. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly, you guys, but it is spelled C-H-U-G-A-C-H, so I don't think that I was even going to get close. If I butchered that, I'm really sorry. And I know what you're thinking, that it sounds picturesque, but it also sounds extremely remote. According to the NOAA, average summer temperatures in Girdwood, July, their warmest month of the year, range from the low 60s to low 70s. The Girdwood Forest Festival attracts a lot of tourists from around the state and the young locals. July 1st, 1995, David swings by Stephanie's house to pick up Erin. Her nephew, ominously foreshadowing, but only 4 years old at the time, asks his Aunt Erin if she's going to take the family cell phone. She shrugs it off and declines, as they weren't glued to people's hands like they are now, and she joins David in the driveway climbing into his car. It's something her older sister Stephanie Juarez would reflect on many times in interviews, saying that she wishes Erin would have just taken the cell phone. Erin, at the time, who was wearing a black leather jacket, a black and white striped shirt, black jeans, and brown mountain boots, looked forward to the festival. She was definitely spunky, unique, and she had a large blue flower tattooed on her chest. The festival encompassed the type of ruggedness and grungy vibes that Erin loved. The pair headed south along a winding Alaskan freeway called the Turnagain Arm. This freeway has long stretches of road that are especially dangerous in the wintertime, but vehicles are required to have their lights on at all time while driving, no matter what the season. They completed their hour-long drive and arrived at the Girdwood Forest Fair. Around 6 p.m. that evening, David states that they went to his car and that the vehicle would not start because he had accidentally left his lights on during the entire duration of the festival. He told Erin that he had a friend who lived nearby the festival and that he was going to walk to their house to get a jump. Erin declines to come and stays back with the car. When David returns, nearly 2 hours later, Erin was gone. So I'm going to dive in on this with a little bit of commentary. I think it is super sketchy that he couldn't find, one, anybody at the festival in the parking lot who would be willing to give him a jump, two, that he conveniently has a friend located nearby, and three, that he's gone for 2 hours. I'm thinking, obviously this boy did it. He had 2 hours, and he states that it took him that long because he was wandering aimlessly around a nearby subdivision and couldn't locate his friend's residence. But here's where I doubt just a little bit that he might have done it, because what he does next wouldn't make much sense, unless that's what he wants us to think. He tries the car's ignition again, and it starts. How convenient. He heads back into the festival at an attempt to locate Erin. He's asking everyone he can if they've seen his date. He grows worried, not necessarily that she's missing, but that this girl's mad at him because he's just a dumb boy who couldn't remember to turn his lights off, killed his car battery, left his date at the car, and wandered around the subdivision for almost 2 hours. He stays at the festival until shortly after 1 a.m. and then retires his search, figuring she stormed off with other friends or just left him there because she wasn't having it. He ends up phoning into the police at the festival anyways, just in case, and returns home that night. The next morning, around 7 a.m., he calls Stephanie's home line and asks if Erin has returned because he was worried about her after not being able to locate her at the festival. I'm going to add in some commentary here again, and I was reading a Reddit thread. I agree with the people of Reddit who were discussing this disappearance, saying that it was really fishy, When you're on a first date and your date goes missing, who reports it to the police? Don't you just figure that the date has stormed off and probably doesn't want to see you again? She obviously had not returned home, and Stephanie is worried, as any big sister would be, and that makes the hour-long drive to Girdwood one of the worst drives of her life. She's with her family, and when she gets to the festival, she has band members announce her sister's name on stage, asking anybody with any information regarding Aaron's whereabouts to come forward. They do a short search with festival goers, but no trace of Aaron turns up. Festival goers, locals, and police team up a few weeks later to search the nearby woods. They included scent dogs and helicopters, and no trace of her anywhere is found. As of right now, her date from that evening, David Combs, is not considered a suspect. Aaron's family believes that she was met with foul play and said that she was very responsible and in no scenario would she have wandered off into the woods in unfamiliar territory alone. There's currently a $35,000 reward being offered by her family to anyone who comes forward with a credible lead in her disappearance and that leads to the arrest of whomever harmed her. This case just haunts me because the entire time they have recovered almost no evidence on this case. There's no DNA, there's no body, there's no eyewitnesses. She seems to have just vanished for over 25 years into thin air. Personally, I think that there's only one person who would have had the opportunity to do it and had the weirdest alibi and story, but since police have not named him as a person of interest or suspect, only time will tell if new information comes out. If you know anything regarding this case, you're encouraged to call the Alaskan State Troopers at 907-428-7200. That's all on this episode of The Crazy Eyes, and that's all the information I have for you guys regarding this case. I'm sorry that it's so short, but I just want to do this minisode to bring a little bit more awareness to her case. Thank you guys so much for listening, and please be sure to subscribe to this podcast if you like it, and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and you want to hear more. And you can also check out my Patreon for some bonus content. Thanks again, and I'll see you on the next episode of The Crazy Eyes.